This is Oklahoma Perspective. Monroe Nichols is a state representative for Oklahoma's 72nd District. He's also running to be Tulsa's next mayor. KRMG's Russell Mills talks to Nichols about his plans for the city.
That's a tough job. So what's your thinking?
I think a mayor is the toughest job in all of elected politics across the country. Hardest job, right? Every day, everything from public safety to is the trash picked up, are the streets working, do we have affordable housing, all those things are a job of a mayor, so it makes it a really difficult job. I'm excited about it because I think about the experience I've had over the years. You know, I started my career, as you may or may not know, in the mayor's office back in 2006. Worked at OU Tulsa when we were designing the School of Community Medicine, so really think about how do we close that gap between life expectancy between our residents in North Tulsa and our residents in Midtown. Left that, worked at Career Tech and at the Chamber, working on job training and business retention expansion, and then founded a nonprofit, Impact Tulsa. So as I think about like the breadth of that experience, job creation, and worker training, really addressing our health issues here in this community. In the legislature over the last 7 years, affordable housing has been a number one issue for me. And then I started that career in the mayor's office working on public safety and education. So if you think about the challenges facing the city right now, I just feel like it's a point now where the things that I've done in this community are all very much aligned to what the needs in the city are right now. And so I'm excited to offer up that experience and take Tulsa into the future.
So tell us a little bit about your background. Grew up here in Tulsa?
So no, I grew up in Central Texas.
Okay. Which town?
In Waco, Texas.
Waco, Texas.
My mom was a probation officer growing up. My dad was a police officer in Houston for 13 years before he passed away. My grandfather was a pastor and an Air Force veteran, and the other grandfather was a plant worker for 36 years. So, you know, whether it was, the law with a probation officer and a police officer's dad, or if it was, you know, the divine with my grandfather being a pastor, I always had to watch what I was doing when I was younger, which was great. But I come from public servants and hard workers. And when I came to Tulsa, I moved to Tulsa as a college student, played football at TU, didn't know anybody here, but got the opportunity to serve this community. And I've been doing it ever since.
So been here, guess if my math is right, 17, 18 years at least, actually longer than
years,
that.
Because, 21 years.
Yeah, because you were in college
years.
Before you
yeah,
started.
Yeah, that's right, 21 years. You know, I moved to Tulsa to go to TU. The last 7 years, I've represented House District 72, which TU is a part of. So I've really been part of really the core of this town since the first day I set foot here.
And for our radio listeners, he's actually literally wearing a tie with TU colors.
Yeah, that's
on
right.
Hey,
you know what? I don't want anybody to be confused about where I'm at. We got a big game this upcoming week. I know there's a lot of Sooner fans out there. I do have a graduate degree from OU, but this week I am all TU, so I'll wear the blue and gold anytime.
100%. Outstanding. All right, so priorities. I mean, we've talked about, and our current mayor has talked about, you know, homelessness issues. Yeah. You talked about the diversity in life expectancy.
Yeah.
Which is a shocking statistic that we talk about a lot, but I don't see us doing a lot to address it, at least not that I've been able to notice.
Yeah, so. You know, we do have some things to look back on and say that we can celebrate a little bit. When we started that work back in the, it was around 2008, 2009, 2010, around in there, there's a 14-year life expectancy gap. That gap now, I believe it's about 11.
Mm-hmm.
So we've made progress. Not the kind of, you know, maybe not at the accelerated pace that we would hope.
How? What did you do? What made that difference?
Yeah, so there's a couple things. You know, you look at really root cause of issues, right? So when we looked at the community pre-Wayman Tisdale Specialty Health Clinic at 36th Street North, there was no access to specialty health care in North Tulsa. So cardiologists, those types of things did not exist north of downtown, or I guess north of Hillcrest Hospital, right? So even a little further south than that. There was also a number of community health initiatives. We had a bunch of school-based clinics back in the day to start to close that gap, which not only helped on the health outcome side, also helped on the attendance side, right? So if the whole family can see a physician that's in the school, well, then the kids go to school without having to be taken out of school to see a physician, that type of deal. We also spent a lot of time in the community working to understand, help folks be educated on like healthy behaviors, eating habits, and that type of stuff. But the other part of it is us really thinking about what are our public investments we have to make. Sidewalks, animal control actually was a really important partner in the work around community health. So it's really thinking about what are the root cause issues that are driving the outcomes that we have, and how do we begin to chip away at those? No doubt about it, the social determinants of health, as we talk about them, are an issue. I think that's where our most persistent issue is in Tulsa. If you look at where we are in education, in economic opportunity, so the income gap, those types of things are still pretty vast in this community. That's the reason why we can't close that number from 14 to 11 down to 3 right now, right, down to 0. We have a lot of work to do, and I think that's going to be a lot of work for the next mayor, right? You asked me about some of the issues that I care about, what I've been talking about, what I'm committing myself to hold myself accountable for as the mayor of the city. I am 100% of the mind that we can end homelessness. We'll have about $100 million to address affordable housing. I think we can make this the safest big city in the country, which is not just about law enforcement. It's also about addressing issues around drug addiction and those types of things. Those all feed into the metrics that make you a safe big city. I also, like I said before, bread and butter is job creation. If we, I know our economic top lines seem to look pretty good right now. If we were to look at kind of the top line data, but I would tell you that unemployment amongst some people in this community is double. If we're honest, we know our workforce pipeline is not where it needs to be. We know that although you bring any business owner in here, I imagine you have a conversation about them. You say, what's your number one issue? They're going to tell you, I can't find employees. Mm-hmm. We have to address all those things, right? And it's going to take a mayor driving that kind of change. And so this can't be an election about, who you've known the longest or who loves this community the most. We all love this community. There's no way you run for office and try to represent this community if you don't love it. This is about who has the depth and breadth of experience to be the mayor who can move these things forward. And that's the reason why I'm running. It's like I do not believe there's anybody else doing this who has that level of experience that's diverse enough to address issues that we're talking about.
So let's talk a little bit about North Tulsa.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a black man. Mm-hmm. You know what happened in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And you also know that, Greenwood recovered largely.
Yep.
And then a stake was driven through its heart in the 1950s in the form of the interstate, which walled it off essentially from the rest of town. Now, recently I spoke to one of your opponents, Mr. Fowler, city councilor, and he said, tearing down that north leg of the IDL and restoring access to Greenwood, says that's really not feasible, but maybe we could build a tunnel under it, tunnel through and
which is so much more feasible.
Well, I don't know. I'm no engineer. But
know.
You tell me, he's not in favor of reparations. He doesn't think that there's really a workable solution for that. That's what I got from him. He does want to establish some TIFs up there. And just drastically lower property taxes to incentivize people to move into the area. And he also wants to open up Booker T again to some of the kids in the neighborhood rather than being a pure magnet school. So those are the three legs, I guess, of his, what he'd like to do with North Tulsa. What are you thinking? What are your thoughts on how do we address the wrongs of a century ago?
Yeah.
How do we spark development? And you talked about healthcare.
Yeah,
we can talk about the food desert.
Right,
we can talk about just the sheer lack of attorneys and insurance agents and whatever you want to north of 244 in Tulsa.
Yeah.
So what do we do about that?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things. Like I'll start with the interstate issue. My colleague in the House, in state representative from House District 73, who is a descendant of race massacre survivors, Regina Goodwin, is working with a number of community members to study, what can be done about, the issue of 244. And my position right now as it relates to that is allow Representative Goodwin and those folks around the table to let us know what is a workable solution there. So I think in any of these things that we're talking about, what's most critically important is engaging the people that live there. And that's what we've always missed out on. We have a lot of ideas about what we're going to do for North Tulsa or even East Tulsa or West Tulsa, whatever the case may be. The people we don't talk to are the people who live in North Tulsa, the people who live in East Tulsa, the people who live in West Tulsa. And I think that is fundamentally what has to change. I'll give you one example. I hope this is not too long example. We talked about this community health work we were doing. Years ago, when we were working at OU, we asked the question, why do folks in North Tulsa, for example, why don't they exercise outside? Why don't they go jogging and stuff like that, like you see in other parts of town? And if we're sitting around a table, those of us who are making guesses, we'll guess, oh, you know, crime is too high, or there's no sidewalks, or whatever the case may
be,
right?
Guess, yeah.
Right. And those are all maybe parts of it. But when we talk to folks in the community, that was not their number one issue. Maybe those were some issues. That was not their number one issue. Their number one issue, and I mentioned this before, was stray dogs. And so animal control becomes a really important partner in community health, which you don't know unless you talk to the people who live it every day.
And can you imagine being afraid to go running around in your neighborhood because of stray dogs? That
yeah,
just blows my mind.
It does blow your mind, but it also starts to unlock how simple it is to solve a key and critical challenge, right? So if you think about, we could have gone and made these big public infrastructure investments for more sidewalks, which I'm not saying we shouldn't also do that. We'd only be making it easier for the dogs to get around the neighborhood, not necessarily for folks to get outside and exercise. And so the only reason why I always use that example, because it's a true example, but B, it goes to show you the difference that happens when you actually engage folks in the community and you ask them, how do we meet your needs, right? I do believe there's some wisdom, and I've had a lot of conversation with folks in the affordable housing space of tiffing parts of North Tulsa to encourage development of housing inventory in that part of the community because it's a challenge right now. I think that's part of it. I think when it comes to education, again, I think this is one of those things where it's all about engaging the folks who live there. How do the folks who live in and around Booker T. Washington High School feel about opening it up for more neighborhood slots? I bet they probably would like that.
I would think so, because who wants to bus their kids across town, which is Mr. Fowler's point.
100%. But the broader question is what does the next mayor have to do so that we don't just have one example of a top 50 high school in this community, right? Because I think that is the core of the issue. Folks want to go to Booker T. Washington High School from all over the city because it is the best high school in the city. How do we create three or four Booker T. Washington high schools is the question we should be asking ourselves. That's the question for the next mayor. And I think that's an important question to answer. So I think as we are all campaigning, it's going to be really interesting to see how many of us are going to be thinking about core and critical issues and willing to fly in the face of some challenges we have to make sure that we do have equality and equity as it relates to a good education for all kids. I co-founded Impact Tulsa. Impact Tulsa's the sole reason why it existed is to ensure that every kid in Tulsa County had a high-quality education. That's the reason why we founded that organization. It's tough, and I think what is going to be required is you got to have a mayor who thinks that education is his or her job at the end of the day. I talked about this affordable housing issue. What changes outcomes for kids? Amount of time in school is always going to change that in a positive way or a negative way. Chronically absent kids aren't going to do as well. So much of our chronic absenteeism is driven by the fact that we're number 11 in evictions in the country. There's a lot of kids who aren't at school because they don't have anywhere to live. And so if I'm going to ask Ebony Johnson and Kirk Hartzler and the other superintendents in this area to deal with my affordable housing issue, well, then I have to deal with their literacy issue. I have to deal with their high school graduation issue. I have to deal with their eighth grade science issue and their kindergarten readiness issue. And I think that is the broader question about what we need to do about education. It's not just about one high school. It's about the 35,000 kids at Tulsa Public Schools, and what are we doing for every last one of them? And a mayor has to step in and figure out what that is.
So how would you characterize the mayor's response to what I would call the intervention into the ongoing operations of the Tulsa Public School District by State Superintendent Ryan Walters?
Yeah, I think that, we all have been trying to figure out what's our role. I've been far more outspoken than most people about this issue with Ryan Walters.
As a state representative.
As a state representative, absolutely. And I think Mayor Bynum, and I was asked this question in an interview, I think that he has largely felt that his impact is greatest behind the scenes. And what I've said is this has been a full court press to make sure that we don't have a school district that certainly has its challenges. Those challenges are a larger result of our collective failure to provide basic services for families, by the way, but it has its challenges. But to keep that school intact so we can continue to make progress that we're making, we need to make more rapid progress, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. But give me any urban school district in the country they got the same challenges, right? So it's really about, as a community, having to figure it out. So I think the mayor has really felt like his ability to be most impactful has been behind the scenes. And, you know, my attitude is, if there are people who are working hard to try to get to a better resolution for Tulsa Public Schools, whether it be behind a microphone or behind the scenes, I'm for their deal. I'm on their side of the ledger on this thing. And so I have a hard time being wholly critical of Mayor Bynum, because I think he felt like his role was a behind the scenes role. And so I think he worked hard at it, and I appreciate him for it.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So how would you characterize Mr. Walter's intervention? Would you characterize it as constructive?
No, I would not. I don't think it's anywhere near constructive. I think what we all have to understand when you're in elected office is, once you are elected, you have a responsibility. He has a responsibility to 700,000 public school kids. I would argue his responsibility goes beyond the public school kids, but let's just zero in the 700,000 public school kids. There are 34, 35 of those 700,000 in Tulsa Public Schools. What he has done for the largest school district in the state is create a sense of chaos unlike anything that had happened before. Now, am I one who believes in change? I absolutely do. I absolutely do. It needs to be constructive, though. And I think what he did is he compromised the ability to recruit teachers, who were like, well, I don't know if the district's going to be here next year, so why would I? We already had a problem. I think we had 400 vacancies going into the summer, teaching vacancies at Tulsa Public Schools. It's tough. It's hard to recruit teachers across the country. That's why Fort Worth has billboards up in Oklahoma City recruiting teachers to the state of Texas. Mm-hmm. He made that more difficult. What it meant for children and families going back to school is complete uncertainty, as if they're not dealing with enough already. So there's no way, shape, or form in which him going about the stuff has been constructive, not the least of which is, you know, suggesting that he might go against the recommendations of his own accreditation team just to score some political points, with Dr. Gist. I just don't think that's a great way to run a system. It's not a responsible way to run things. I certainly wouldn't run the city the way that he's run the State Department of Education, right? When we even go beyond what happened at Tulsa Public Schools, you know, some of the behavior is what led to the, you know, the bomb threats, bogus or not, at Union Public Schools. This is just not a way that we should be running an education system anywhere in the country, but certainly not one in Oklahoma, where we know for sure education is the best equalizer that we have. And to have somebody at the helm of it who, you know, injects chaos at every moment is just not helpful.
All right, so I want to turn back to North Tulsa for a second.
Sure.
So on the idea of TIFs, what might concern me if I was a resident up
sure.
there would be the concept of gentrification.
Yeah.
You know, the people that have been up there, that have lived up there for decades, their families have been there, could get pushed out.
Yeah.
We all know, as you've mentioned, there's a real shortage of affordable homes.
Right.
They start building decent homes up there, and they're going to get snapped
yeah.
up.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
So, you know, how do we avoid that? And is there a window of opportunity for some kind of reparations
yeah.
from the city or the state or both to yeah. the residents of North Tulsa?
So I think the issue of gentrification is an important one for us to talk about. And I think as a city, you know, part of this is, how are you planning for that development? You know, if you're going to TIF something, you're going to give some developers the opportunity to develop affordable housing, right, and make sure that they have a financial incentive to do it. One way to think about this is that you can put liens on some of those properties until they build them to spec, and they are only available for folks who fall in a certain income bracket, making sure that you maintain the culture of the community, you know, historically. So I think there's a lot of things that you can do, right? I think this goes back to what I said before. You got to engage the people who live there.
Oklahoma State Representative from the 72nd District, Monroe Nichols. Special thanks to KRMG's Russell Mills for the interview. This is Oklahoma Perspective for Cox Media Group. I'm Bert Williams.